Well, welcome to Yada Yada Radio. My pleasure to be with you. Looks like we have our regular cast of characters, James and Larry, on the line. How are you, fellas?
Doing good. I think characters is a good word to describe us.
I've been booted from my internet for the 57th time this week, so I'm on a cell phone. But
oh my!
I'm in my recliner, ready to go here.
I understand that you've had quite the battle with was it Comcast?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, it was, and they need to get a Cisco router over here because whatever equipment they're using isn't working. It's cost me several thousand this week, and it's starting to become a pain. But
I just changed all of my hardware here from Netgear to Cisco, and I've been much more stable since that time. I also have a cable internet connection. I use Cox Cable for my internet, and they've updated everything near where I am, and I've had a pretty stable relationship with
them. Well, I've got Cox as well, business class. I'm sure you do,
yep,
too.
That's what I have, yep.
But it's their equipment that's failing. It was right after I did their upgrade. It's just been bad news. But speaking of bad news, today I did have three running battles. Religious initiates. Now, I don't mind somebody that doesn't want to know the truth. I really don't care. If they want to be the walking dead, let them.
Yeah,
but when somebody approaches you
and
starts questioning, and you lay out 2 hours worth of information in front of them, and then they run back to their KJV and start quoting Paul, it's a little disheartening. And at that point, I give them the international sign of disgust, you know.
Yeah.
And,
Well, the nice thing is for them, it's really convenient, since they love Paul and they love King James, they'll find both. They're going
to
love
this. You're going to love this one.
But, by the way, what I mean by they're going to find both is that anyone who is a King James Pauline Christian is going to encounter both in Sheol. And they're headed right there, and particularly if they're a promoter of both, they're going to find Paul as leader of the chorus in Sheol, and they'll find James as one of his victims.
I had one guy that was listening to this conversation. You know, I was explaining that Paul decided that the pagan goddesses of Gracchia would be a better idea than the mercy of the Torah.
Right.
And I said, just look at gospel. And he went and looked it up. He says, that's God's spell.
Yeah.
And, you know, then he goes to the Greek glousion or whatever it is that means, you know, good news.
Euangelion means, you means either helpful or beneficial, secondarily good, but primarily helpful and beneficial.
And then
agelos is not news. Agelos is actually messenger. And so it's a beneficial messenger, and it can be extrapolated to a helpful message, but it most certainly is not gospel.
You got to get the punchline. He goes right from that to that means gospel, which is God's spell, which means God's truth. I said, so your God casts spells. Is that right? I said, because I didn't see Yahweh doing that anywhere. That's the kind of hoops they go through.
Yeah. What is so amazing about gospel, and gospel is, I would say, second only to church, the second most misleading word in the Christian New Testament. I'm going to take that the church is the worst because Christians believe that that God has a church, that He created His church, that He uses His church, when there is no word even remotely akin to church. That's the name of a pagan sun goddess, the daughter of Helios, with Church. But it's far worse than that because the Greek word, which Yosha never used, not once, never spoke
ecclesia,
Greek. But ecclesia is the Greek word, and ecclesia is the closest Greek analog to mikra. And so the Hebrew word, for him to be translated saying ecclesia, the word that he would have used in Hebrew is mikra. And when you understand how important the mikra are and his role in establishing the mikra, and you deprive people of that and you replace it by a religious institution that has no connection whatsoever to any one of the seven mikra, I look at that as the single greatest falsehood, fraud, that is perpetrated in the Christian New Testament, because it absolutely
it's certainly
totally
the most
precludes,
misleading.
Right.
It's certainly the most misleading.
It precludes people finding the path, participating on the path to God. They have a Christian Goyim institution that is associated with God as opposed to the seven mikrae, and they then associate those mikrae with the Jews and are disgusted by them. The second
Loony Shabbat nut.
I want to talk about gospel here before we go to the end. All right. The reason that gospel is so devastating is because the first four books of the Christian New Testament were given the title gospels, the gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Now, none of them are actually gospels, not a single one of them, but they're called gospels. And then Yosha is translated twice over saying that he preached the gospel. Well, he was speaking Hebrew, which means he said Bashar. Bashar means healing and beneficial message. And it was then changed, translated, Bashar was translated to Evangelion, which is healing and beneficial message or messenger. And while he was saying Bashar, healing and beneficial message, he was affirming what the Torah, prophets, and Psalms have to say about Yahweh's Torah. They boldly proclaim that the Torah is Yahweh's helpful, healing, and beneficial message, and that he is the messenger delivering it. So long as it's properly rendered, then there's the connection between Yahusha and the Torah. But it isn't. It's Evangelion is replaced. It's not translated. It's replaced by gospel. And now with Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John mislabeled as gospels, with gospel being put into the Jesus Christ dialogue, and with Paul proclaiming the gospel of faith in grace, what you end up with is this myth that Christianity is based upon, and Pauline doctrine is a faith based upon the gospels. But none of the gospels were ever cited by Paul. He never refers to them. He condemns their authors. And so there is no correlation between these things and no correlation between Yosha and gospel, and yet it's the basis of Christianity. So Christianity claims that it is it's faith in the gospel when, in fact, there is no such thing. And so it completely deflects people's attention from the fact that Yosha is constantly citing and explaining the Torah, and yet...
But yet it goes
hand in glove
with faith.
Right.
It's almost 100% perfect fit.
Correct. And so what you end up with is this complete fabrication of a scriptural concept called the gospel. And, you know, as I read Mark and Luke, it is painfully obvious that they were hearsay accounts, two and three people away from the actual witnesses, and that they aren't even remotely akin to being inspired. Not even remotely. And so other than Matanyah, in terms of a biography, that's all you got. And Yahochanan isn't really a biography, because Yahochanan really just delves into certain conversations and doesn't attempt to produce a biography. So all you got in terms of biography is Matanya, and the rest of it is essentially trash. And yet that's the basis of Christianity, they claim, except when you actually read what Yosha said, even in any one of those four books, his testimony is completely inconsistent with Paul's. So what was your second issue there, Lair?
Oh, well, my next issue was with a loony Shabbat. And, you know, I whipped out the Torah on it. You know, we went right to Bereshit 1:4, where, you know, he talks about the these great lights being symbols. And
yeah, the greater light being a symbol for the Moed.
For the Moed. Right. He didn't even know what a Moed was. I said, if you're telling me that the Shabbat is a Moed, you don't know what the Moed Mikre are about.
Right.
And he says,
there are Moed, and I'm telling you it's not there. Right. Yeah. There are Moed that are Shabbaton, which are special celebrations of the Shabbat, but the Shabbat is not a Moed.
Well, absolutely not. It's not. And, you know, it's a reoccurring 7 days. I went through history, and then I used Torah. And then I took the moon cycle of 29 and a half days and divided by 7 and said, wow, that doesn't work.
That does not work. He didn't say six and a half days plus the one day, did he? And, no, it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And why would Yahweh want us to be fixated on every month, at the end of the month, having a couple of days that just don't count? I mean, how does the math work?
You wouldn't do that.
I don't get it. Now, I would ask you a question. I am not an obedience guy, and I know that there's listeners to this program, there's listeners, people who have read the books, Yada Yah and Introduction to God, that are not happy with me because I am not an obedience guy. I do not try to obey the Torah. I try to learn from the Torah. But that said, so you know my prejudice here. On the Shabbat, is it appropriate for us to engage in the work of teaching?
Yes. Yahusha did it. Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you're in the medical profession, is it appropriate for you to engage in healing?
Yes. I would say yes, it is.
Absolutely.
Yosha did it.
Yeah. You know, Yosha helped to explain the fact that the Torah should be, I mean, the Shabbat should be a celebration of life. It should be a celebration of our relationship with Yahuwah. So, perfect day to teach, perfect day to study, perfect day to read the Word, perfect day to heal, perfect day to reach out to people and to help them. So you know, it's not about a series of rules that have to be obeyed, but instead an attitude that we have just begun a 24-hour period that is set apart, and that we are doing on it exactly what Yosha did. Now I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that if we're going to pick one person to follow their example, he'd be the one.
Yeah, now there's one more real interesting one. He actually sent a note out talking about how Yahusha did not exist until he was born in a human body.
Mm.
I said, well, obviously you don't know him. You know, and I went to, where he said, before Abraham I am, and Yahukanan, that I'm a part of Yahweh.
You just missed half of what he said.
Now, I will tell you that prior to the transition from light energy to matter, there would not have been an ability to have a kodesh, a most set apart entity. So a corporeal manifestation of Yahweh would not have been feasible before matter. But once the
That's not what he was saying.
I know that. So from the moment that light energy begins to cool to the point that there is matter and time begins to flow. So the moment time exists, Yosha exists. But, you know, of course, who walked in the garden with Adam? Now, I'm going to tell you, the entirety of Yahweh does not fit in the garden.
Yeah, it was the physical manifestation of Yahweh, so that's Yahusha.
Yeah, who dined and celebrated life with, even laughed with Abraham and Sarah?
Abraham.
Yeah, Yahusha. Who was the one that, when Shamuel was celebrating his relationship with Yahweh, and he says, he came and was physically present with me. We ate, we chatted, we met together. Who was that? It's Yahusha. When Moshe is writing down the Torah, he's eating and dining and chatting with and has a physical presence of Yahusha. Yahusha absolutely had, and by the way, that's one of the things we were talking about, and I'm happy to be wrong here, but I don't think that Yosha's physical manifestation means two hoots. I mean, other than ultimately serving as the Passover lamb, I don't think there's anything even the least bit remarkable about him being born or his physical manifestation. And so, when you even read the eyewitness accounts, his coming into existence in the womb of Mary is presented no differently than Yaokanan the immerser in the womb of Elizabeth. And Yaokanan was, clearly had a mom and a dad. So, I think we have to be really... the thing that made Yosha is his soul was Yahweh's soul, and the spirit was set apart. Spirit was almost infinitely more powerful, more compelling, more engaged with him than she is with the rest of us. I suspect that. If our souls were, if we actually had Yahweh's soul rather than Larry's soul or Craig's soul or James's soul, I suspect we could get to the same level of understanding vis-a-vis the set-apart spirit. But that's my view, is that Christianity went wrong when they began to turn their God into a man, when their God became a man. And that physical corporeal manifestation, other than to serve as the Passover lamb, and then to be destroyed that night, was as valuable as it was on the morning of Matzah, which is ceasing to exist.
I mean, he tells us not to focus on his physical manifestation right in his word. So.
Right.
Clearly, we're to be looking through Yahusha to Yahweh, and since they're one and the same, one is smaller than the other.
Right.
That's what it is. And so,
I'm going
to
tell you what I
come across with the three different personalities of the Babylonian, Trinity.
Yahusha that I pay attention to that I find enlightening. We've talked about one of them already. How did Yahusha observe the Shabbat? He went into synagogues, he read the Torah and the prophets, and he taught, and he healed. That's what he did on the Shabbat. So I think there's things that we can learn from a diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, but
it should not be our focus.
No, gosh, no. It's not what he wants. It's not what we should want.
It's a very small portion of God's plan, and we don't need to give it any more attention than we do the rest of the plan.
Correct. Everything we need to know about Yahusha is presented in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and there's very precious little said about him in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. Now, I do, that's, even though everything we need to know about him is in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and it's particularly in his fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, and Bukurim, fact remains that beyond what that says, I think the only benefit from Yahusha is that he did say some things that I think provide certainty and clarification regarding the Torah. And he acted in such a way that provide a wonderful affirmations that that Dode's approach to the Torah is appropriate. And what I mean by that is when he was constantly hunted down by the Pharisees for his refusal to obey the letter of the law of the Torah. Particularly on the Shabbat. And he was constantly saying, come on, don't get all in a twit over this. You know, this is not supposed to be something that is legalistic. It's a day set apart for teaching, for healing, for the relationship and the celebration of life. And so I think his approach towards the Shabbat is powerful affirmation that it exists for us to celebrate our day with Yahweh, to learn.
Well, that and the fact he took the strokes to the family and a number of things, but you get my point here. When somebody's pushing the Babylonian Trinity myth, they're stupid. And course, all his great translations came out of a King James Version book named after Biblio. So, I mean, it was just absolutely horrid situation.
Wow. And one of the problems, of course, is that not only does that book contain Paul's letters, and Paul was inspired by Hasatan, Satan, by his own admission, but it isn't even remotely consistent with the earliest manuscripts. We talked in two shows ago that I can't find any motivation for trying to write about what is presented in Revelation, even though much of Revelation, I do think, was conveyed through Yahusha and through his Malach messengers. I can't find any motivation for conveying it because we don't have old enough manuscripts and it's in Greek. I don't think we have credibility. In fact, Richard, I don't know if Richard is listening this evening, but Richard wrote an individual who was focusing on the book of James, which would be Jacob, and probably not Jacob in terms of the brother, but Jacob that was the non-brother Jacob. And he just said, why are you doing that? Yeah, I understand that that the book of Jacob is hostile to Paul and to Paul's letters and Paul's approach. But we don't have any reliable texts. He didn't write it in Greek. It's been so corrupted. What good is it really? What's the benefit?
And furthermore, there's a much better condemnation of Paul found in Yah's Torah.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a more reliable source.
Yeah, Devarim, the entire Torah. Since Pauline Christianity is based upon creation of a second covenant, when Yahweh in Bereshit said there's only one, and that it's based upon the Torah's covenant being with Hagar, when Yahweh clearly says that is not the case. It's with Sarah and with Abraham and with Yishak. All you have to do is compare Paul's initial letter, Galatians, to Bereshit, Genesis, the first book of the Torah, and you find that they're in opposite universes. I remember when I first, when I was trying to deal with Paul and I came to that was the that was the point where I just said, I can't pretend anymore. There's no way that I can pretend that Paul is assailing the Babylonian Talmud. First of all, the Babylonian Talmud didn't even exist at the time, and the Jerusalem Talmud was pretty thin at the moment. But when he is saying that the Torah that was inscribed on Mount Sinai is a covenant that enslaves because it was formed with Hagar. I mean, at that moment, the gig was up. It was impossible to justify Paul. And I remember
justifying that.
Yeah, and then I remember writing my good friend at the time, Ken, and I said, Ken, there is no way to deal with this. I mean, I've gone to 100 Christian sites, and every one of them say, yeah, that Paul created a new covenant, and that the old covenant enslaves. I said, Ken, I want to tell you, it's over. There is no way to resolve this. And I remember him going through some hoops to try to justify it, and it was just laughable, and it was more sad, I guess, than anything else. But
sort of like
going from
gospel to God's truth.
Yes.
Yeah, you can show them Chabbalah if you want to. I've done it. I did that yesterday and today in the Paleo Hebrew group. And I said, so show me a guy named Shea that was around during the Moed, the fulfillment of the Moed.
Right.
Who will mislead people.
Fixated with the male genitalia, was opposed to circumcision. Use circular reasoning.
Yeah, who is this going to be? Can you name one in history? Just one.
Right, just one. Yeah. Who appealed to the totality of Gentiles and whose message was so vile that it became the plague of death with no one who trusted him being satisfied. Why don't you come up with an alternative character for that one? And I'll give you 10 years. Do your research. You come up with an alternative. There isn't. Just isn't. He's it. That's like I can tell you to say, I'm going to give you 10 years to research, and you come up with the false apostles of Ephesus, and you come up with a name other than Paul and Timothy.
Sure.
Or you come up with when Yosha was speaking of those that would lead even the set apart away from him by demeaning the Torah, and he referred to them as a wolf in sheep's clothing. You come up with another Benjamite that did that. Yeah, I'll give you 10 years. Come up with one.
All this was laid out in front of them. All of it. Every bit of it.
Or you come up with an explanation of how Yosha said, if anybody claims that they have seen me before the entire world sees me simultaneously, they're lying. Don't believe them.
Right. How do
you reconcile that with Paul's revelation? Yeah, can't be done.
No, I asked him, who was the liar here, Yosha or Paul? I asked him, showed him that.
Yeah.
Who was the liar here?
Right.
You know, but these people are,
they wanted to condemn Yosha and say Yosha was mistaken there, then Paul can't be truthful. He claims he represents him. What good is it to represent a liar?
Well, that's exactly right. I mean,
it's a catch-22.
It was a very interesting couple of days.
Yeah, when Paul claims that he was demon-possessed, how do you deal with that, Christian? That's what he says, is the thorn in his side is a messenger of Satan. He says, I'm demon-possessed.
Not only does he say that, but he says Satan was helping him, right? He was toning him down so he could be humble. So
right.
Satan is helping Yahweh's messenger. I mean, that's what he says.
Yeah, that's what he
said. How would that work out?
Yeah. When he, in the same book, admits that he's insane. How do you deal with that?
Sure.
How do you deal with Romans 7, where Paul makes statements about a commandment that does not exist, and says that the non-existent commandment caused him to be a sexual pervert. That's what he says.
What non-existent commandment was that?
Well, the commandment is that thou shalt not be a sexual pervert.
Oh.
That was the, I'm pretty straightforward on the 10 instructions here. I mean, I think I've got them down. I don't have to be the sharpest
77 words
in the shed to figure out what the 10 statements are and when what they say. And I'm here to tell you, there is not a statement that says thou shalt not be a sexual pervert. But Paul claims in Romans 7 that there is a statement saying don't be a sexual pervert, and he says if that didn't exist, I wouldn't know what sexual perversion was, but now that I know, it's what caused me to be a sexual pervert. Now, how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the fact that Yahweh and through Daniel, tells us that Rome is the most vicious, the most vile, the most deadly of all human institutions. And then you have Paul writing a letter to the Romans and saying that God established that government and that you ought to submit to it. How do you reconcile those things?
Well, I don't. I don't have to.
But, you know, for a Christian, I mean, come on.
Yeah. It's a beating, isn't it?
It's just a beating. It's just...
I know.
You have no sense of cognitive dissonance.
No.
Oh, believe me,
not
each and every one
of
them got the
logical reason.
Each and every one of them.
Yeah.
I've actually, you know, if I thought about imams and priests and preachers and rabbis, I'd give them all, you know, pretty much the equal net money. I really would.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you know what's interesting, too?
When it comes down to the people that carry their water, I give them the king of dumbass. And I'll tell you why. They don't even get any temporal comfort for acting like a slave carrying the water. They get no gain.
No.
Wow. So they don't even get anything out of it.
You're speaking of the Trinity. You know, twice in the first four books of the so-called Christian New Testament, you find a conversation where Yosha's asked, you know, what's the greatest of the commandments is how it's translated in English, and I don't care what the Greek word underlined it means, but, you know, what's the greatest? And he cites that famous line in Devarim, that hear, O Yisrael, Yahweh is our God, Yahweh is one, and you should love Yahweh with all your mind, your heart, and your soul. And so here is Yosha saying that the single greatest instruction is understand that Yahweh is God and that Yahweh is one. And yet they make the individual that made that statement the third person of a Trinity. How do you do that? I mean, how do you do that?
You talk about purposeful misleading all the way through. You know, once you know the truth and you start reading, you see where they, oh, okay, we can get this avenue here. We can get them off on this avenue here. It's all perfect. It's like going from ecclesia to church, okay?
Right.
It's so obvious to us. He said, Mikre. We know that. And we know it was purposeful. It's purposeful to call a Pesach dinner the Lord's Supper. It's purposeful to call... You know, the circulation in the center of life, a tomb. I mean, it's insane. And it's insidious is what it is. And it's purposeful. So it's
like the rewrite of Questioning Paul. It says, all right, I'm going to go through these 20 things. And I'm going to take the 20 most egregious lies of Christianity. And I'm going to ask you after each one of them, if your religion deliberately lied to you about this, what else did it lie to you about? You know, you begin with Jesus. You move on to Christ. You go on to the Trinity. You move to church. You deal with gospel. You deal with grace. You deal with Sunday. You deal with Christmas and Easter. And you go through them, and after you have 20 of these, and say, if they lied to you about these things, what else did they lie to you about, and why do you trust them? Why do you believe them if they lied to you about they have a religion based on a misnomer, and they pray to someone whose name they don't even know.
How many lies do they have to tell before you stop believing them?
That was the purpose of the new introduction to Questioning Paul.
Yeah.
Is there's 20 of these, and say, how many times do they have to lie to you before you stop believing them? And you know that the answer should be once. Once. If they lied to you once about something that's important, for example, how could there have been a bodily resurrection when Yah was really clear that the body was destroyed the evening of Pesach and no one recognized him the following day? Not a single person. And even those, according to the eyewitness accounts, even those who had, who he identified himself and described, this is who I really am, to, he reappeared to them later on in a different setting. And guess what? The second time they didn't recognize him.
Yes, right.
You know, the first time he walks through the wall, he walks through the wall, which, by the way, means he did not have a body anymore. He walks through the wall, and they don't know who he is. And then the next time, they're out there having breakfast out there by the lake and trying to figure out what in the world they're going to do. And he joins them for breakfast, and they don't have a clue who he is. You know, so, I mean, put it together, folks. It's not hard. It really isn't.
Well, it's just what you're hearing from me tonight is going through so many of these, and these were people who approached me. That's the thing.
Right.
I didn't jump in on.
Right.
These were people that had read notes and now approached me.
Mm-hmm.
And to lay down hours with each of them, you know, reason, straight reason, and covering many of the things you just spoke about. At the end for them to go, well, you know, if you go over there and you look at what Paul said in, Galatians or Ephesians, and I say, are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
Are you really serious about this?
Right.
Because I can see you don't really much like Yahweh's words, do you? Oh, they go through the roof on that.
Right. They don't. You know, and by the way, you know, if you want to put together an argument that includes Yahweh's testimony, if somebody can find Yahweh's testimony and present it in context, properly translated, and it is in opposition to what you're saying, then you're going to be humble to the point where you're going to have to say, you know, that does at least on superficially look like it's a conflict. I know there's no conflict in his testimony. Therefore, I need to do some homework. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Either you've got whatever you said out of context and poorly translated, or I've got what I've got out of context and poorly translated. So let's get together and reason our way through this. That's a really good point that you appear to have raised.
I think we all know that honor thy mother and father is not what the words say.
No.
And put in the context where they relate, we know it means the Ruach Kodesh,
right,
and Yahweh.
It's you as significant.
You know, I had
your,
one of them look
your
at
mother
that
and
say,
father. But yeah, in that context,
it ain't mommy and daddy.
Yeah,
I had
context,
one of them look at that and say to me, so you're using his own words to replace his commandment. Wow.
Yeah, well, first of all,
I told him, I've got a brother that's mentally retarded that's got an IQ higher than you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're happy to say that, yes, it says that you should view as significant your mother and father. Now, let's consider why that was the second of seven instructions. So, therefore, it's the second most important. It's more important than not making a practice of killing. So, why would Yahweh make that second only to his instructions on the Shabbat? And then why would he put it in context with the second instruction where he says that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation? So if fathers are corrupting their children to the third and fourth generation, that's in the second instruction. And then you're down here just three more further down, and it says to view as significant your father. You tell me how you can read that in context and come to the conclusion that the Father is any other than our Heavenly Father.
Or you add to that where it says, so that your days in the land will be prolonged. What does honoring obeying your mother and father have to do with how long you will live?
Nothing. Nothing.
Absolutely
but
nothing.
You
and by the way,
Heavenly
what
Father
if your dad's an atheist like mine was? Should I honor his atheism? Really. And worse than that, what if somebody has a father that's a child molester? Then
my dad threatened to kill me.
Well, yeah, you had a lovely father, too.
My father was anti-Semitic. And so I want to tell you that honoring him would have been grotesquely counterproductive. Honoring him would have been the same as the second statement, which says that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation. But viewing my Heavenly Father as significant, viewing our spiritual mother as significant, now that has transformed me from mortal to immortal and has given me an engraved invitation into the promised land.
Well, that's what separates us out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, really.
And by the way, so for someone to criticize that, and I understand how somebody could say, okay, you're adding to it by saying Heavenly Father and spiritual mother, and they would be correct in saying we're adding to it. Everything
pointing something out is adding to it. Huh?
Okay. Figuring something out is in fact going beyond what the words actually say. That's the whole process of thinking, connecting, and understanding. And I'm here to tell you that if you look at what Yahusha said, and as he's recorded speaking in the in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, let me just use the English to get through it quickly. What you find is that he almost never, other than the proclamation that he made about the Torah in the Sermon on the Mount, he almost never directly answers a question. Almost everything he does, he extrapolates, he wraps all around it, or he speaks in a parable so that people have to think about, okay, who are the characters, what's the story, how does this apply, what does it mean? So that there is nothing that he says that unless you were to make connections and try to understand what he's talking about, that you're not going to understand any of it. And I think that's the entirety of the Torah as well. Yahweh doesn't say that the path to him begins with the doorway named Passover and across the threshold of Matzah, so that you can be adopted into his family on Bukurim. You need to read it and think about it and make the connections to understand that that is the only rational conclusion based on the evidence. And the same would be true with the Heavenly Father and Spiritual Mother on that second of seven instructions.
Yeah, it's real simple. Yahweh does not want any intellectually lazy people in his home. Because they're no fun.
They're no fun. And that's the reason why he spoke and he explained, he said, listen, I'm going to answer everybody in parables. If you don't understand the parable, we'll privately talk about it, he told his disciples. But I'm going to answer everybody in parables because if you're not willing to think your way through it, then you're not somebody I want to spend eternity with. That's the bottom line.
Speaking of IQs, I had it out with the Black Hebrew Roots Movement.
Oh, boy.
And one of them literally told me, this was this week, one of them honestly told me that Yahweh is a Black Hebrew. And I said, wow, all this time. I thought he was a being of light and pure energy. Thank you for squaring me away, you idiot. I mean, I was talking to somebody that had to have an IQ of 70 to pull that one. But, she stood on it, for real.
Wow. You know, I don't
People
have a problem with
so
somebody.
It's shocking.
Yeah, I do
it's
not have
shocking.
A problem with somebody wanting to view Yahusha in the same skin color that they have. I don't have a problem with that. If that makes you happy, since I think
that's
physical...
wonderful, except the BHI hate the Jews. And you can't hate the family and be adopted.
Yeah, there's a problem. If you
that's
prejudice against the chosen people, and the chosen people are Yisraelites, if you're antagonistic towards the chosen people, you might as well dismiss everything in Hebrew, because it won't apply to you, because you'll be estranged from the covenant. That's I may dislike, and I do, to Judaism, and so does Yahweh. I may dislike, and I do, Israeli politics. But I recognize that Yahweh loves Israelites. They are his chosen people, and he loves Israel. And so, I am not going to be racially or nationally opposed to either. And even if there's justification, you say, well, you know, what you just did was pretty stupid. You just can't go there. The moment you have animosity towards Israel as a place, as a nation, and Israelites as descendants of Jacob, then you're on the outs with God, because that's not his position.
Well,
so you're right.
Obviously, in the very end, what you've got's the entire world attacking Jerusalem.
Correct.
Correct. And they're the enemy. Correct. I mean,
correct.
According to Yahweh, they're his enemy.
So, right. And who does Yahweh come back to restore his relationship with?
Judah.
Yahudah and Yisrael. It isn't us goyim. He didn't say he's coming back to restore his relationship with Cush. Cush means black.
Hey, buddy,
by the way,
I'm laying it out to him that way. I even showed him the moment that the covenant is restored in Zechariah. It's pretty easy
right.
to do.
With Yisrael and with Yahudah, and all you have to do is turn back a few pages, and what you find is that Yisrael is the new name of Jacob. Jacob became Yisrael because his 12 sons are Yisrael. I'm here to tell you, they aren't black.
No, they're not. And as a matter of fact, and you know this, and everybody out there probably listening knows this, my wife is from Shiraz. That's exactly where Koresh had his kingdom. That's exactly the guy they call Cyrus. That's exactly where he brought them back. There were 20,000 in that community. They only marry each other. They won't marry outside their community. There were 20,000 of them in Shiraz when the Islamic Revolution came along, and there's still 10,000 of them there.
Yeah.
And guess what? You look at a picture of them, they aren't Africans. And I put that right in front of them. You know what one of them told me? Well, they look like Persians that converted to Judaism. I said, brilliant.
Yeah, well,
brilliant. So 2,500 years...
Since all of the disciples had Hebrew names and they were Israelites, when did Yosha relocate his promised land and move it to Africa? When did he come up with a new city? And where's the name of that city that he replaced with Jerusalem? And where is his declaration that it's not the heirs to the covenant are not Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob, who became Yisrael, but instead Cush?
Well, they'll tell you they were all black. That's the point. What they do is that they do a misrendering, and
Cush is black. Cush is black. Cush is black.
They do a misrendering somewhere.
Shem was not black.
Where Yahweh's talking about people becoming dark and becoming like midnight, and it's the pejorative dark, okay?
Right.
He's talking about they end up acting like everyone else, and then they fade into darkness, and they take that as, oh, we're dark.
Yeah,
it is the most insane.
When your view of your relationship with Yahweh is based on the tone of your skin, the color of your skin, you have gone astray.
Yeah, you've got problems.
Yeah. Right. You know, I'm a redskin. I'm a Sioux Indian. I don't think that being a Sioux Indian holds any weight with the dad. And I'm also Irish.
I don't either.
And I am absolutely certain being Irish doesn't hold any weight with dad.
Well,
you know,
I reckon you're right.
And I would love to be a Yisraelite, because that does hold some weight with dad. But I'm not, and I'm never going to be. So I can be adopted and grafted into the vine, and that's good enough. It's more than good enough, and I'm happy with that. I'm actually.
Well,
not
it works for me. I don't know where I come down, but I do know that Hendrix Meyer's Jewish, and that was our name. So I'm at least a quarter. I promise you
okay.
that.
Okay. Oh, good.
Now I don't know where that comes down in the scheme of things. I really don't know.
Yeah,
but,
I don't know. I'm hopeful for you.
I don't care.
Well, you know, it's to be a Yisraelite means that you can actually qualify as a conveyor as a witness on behalf of Yahweh. I am a witness of the witnesses. You know, in the sense of, I can, Yahweh witnessed through Moshe, he witnessed through Yashayah, he witnessed through Yirmiyah, and as a Goyim, I do not look at my, capability to be anything more than witnessing on behalf of the witnesses.
Well, that's all I do, obviously.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. But we got
fine with that.
She can step up to the plate and witness. She can
yeah,
do it.
There's a huge difference between being a prophet and sharing what Yahweh said through the prophets.
Yeah.
And by the way, while there is a difference in terms of position, there is absolutely no difference in terms of access to Yahweh. Yahweh spoke in first person to the prophets. The prophets wrote down what he said. So, from my perspective, Yahweh speaking in first person to you and me. Since he spoke in first person to the prophets, he told and the prophets wrote down what he said in first person. How is it any different, other than we weren't the initial mechanism for writing this down? How is that
well,
any different?
Well, it's not. It's
I don't
not.
Think it is.
That's the point. It isn't. And,
no.
And of course, but part of the problem I've got with the BHI, as they call themselves, is the coveting, the hatefulness that they have towards Jews. They go, oh, yeah, I love real Jews. You know.
Which they identify as Africans.
Right. Well, they, you know, I had one of them tell me that he could think of 7 million Zionists that needed to die. Well, I said, well, you sound like the enemy coming in to attack Jerusalem there.
Right. Wow. Right.
I said, you're just Yahweh's enemy. You're my enemy. I told him that. I said,
right.
I'll tell you right now, I hate you.
You're right.
I hate you and I wish you dead. That's what I told him. I said, but me wishing you dead won't matter because you're already dead.
You're already dead. You're already dead.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure.
I trifle with those who curse thee. And he's speaking of Abraham's descendants, and Abraham's descendants would be the Yisraelites. And those who curse, those who say, I wish they were dead, that would certainly be cursing them. And Yahweh says, I will slight them. Now, to be slighted by Yahweh, that's not good, because he's
but
the only
bad
source
news,
of...
because no matter what you do, you can't get out of that one.
You can't
so,
get out of that
yeah,
one.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like when we turn now to the 91st Psalm.
Oh, you're finally getting there. I'm sorry for beating up so much of this.
No, that's all right.
The problem children
you know,
I dealt with
no,
all these.
You know, those of us who participate in this program do so for one of three reasons. And those three reasons, I think, are all interrelated. One is just the fellowship, being together as a family. And that's why the chat
that's
room
number
is so,
one.
Is so active. Yeah. And we're having a family discussion. Last week was exceptional because we had a family, we had a really, really interesting family discussion with Richard and then with William. I mean,
William.
Really touching.
What a great show.
What a great expression of family love. So that's, to me, I think that's the single biggest priority. So we're here to celebrate our relationship to one another as family with Yahweh is Dad. That's number one. Number two is the more we study Yahweh's testimony, the more we learn, the more we grow. And as his children, while we are welcome in the covenant and in eternity as babes, it is more fun to grow. And that's kind of the fun of it. So we're going to turn to the 91 the Psalm for that. But there is a third reason that I think that a very significant number of us participate in this program. And that is because we have loved ones that don't know Yahweh, that have not embraced the terms and conditions of the covenant, who are still trapped in religion. And so when we discuss openly the flaws in religion, and we do it over and over and over again, different issues, different perspectives, different reasons, the more often we talk about the objections to the Torah and to the covenant, the more effective all of us become when given the opportunity to reach out to someone we care about. So, you know, I'm going to think about William since I just mentioned William. William is a great example of that. By participating in this program, by listening to what we have, William is among the most effective at reaching out to those close to him. Many people have come to know Yahweh, or at least in that process, because of what William has to share. So I think that's
peace
a huge
out dinner with his aunt. And with nephew, yeah, I met him. I mean, I stood right there with him. So,
right.
Yeah. He turned them around. Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
and without us taking the time to talk about what's wrong with Christianity and how you answer their objections, which is, you know, a big part of what you do, Larry, is answering religious objections. I think it is one of the three purposes of this program. So I don't ever look at that as a distraction. And by the way, you know, you all know how to reach me. If you think that isn't why you come here and you don't want to go over that, you know, send me letters. And if it's a common theme and you don't want to go over that, then, you know, I understand, and we'll just focus on Yahweh's testimony.
I for one enjoy it.
I do too. And the other thing I enjoy is the spontaneity that exists with a family discussion, because I suspect that in eternity, this is what we're going to be doing. And it was one of the things that maybe the most recent of all revelations of the insights that I've come up with and shared. This is probably the most recent of them, which is that it is okay, in fact, it's even good, that we interpret certain aspects of Yahweh's instructions and teaching and creation differently. Because if we all agreed on everything exactly the same way, then what fun is eternity going to be?
It's going to be boring.
Right. I think that Yahweh likes
really
it. But,
yeah, that was really fun. Yeah, let's do that again.
Yeah, you know, the fun is, come, let us reason together. Come, let us.
You think that's what it means? Well, I think this is what it means, but I see what you're saying there, and that's kind of interesting.
Right. For example, you and I, James, both on this show and privately in emails, have a disagreement on whether or not Passover is 7 days or 8 days over unyeasted bread. And yeah. And every argument that you present, I agree with. I still, you know, in the end, we've come to different conclusions. But I've enjoyed the discussion. I support all of your all of the facts that you bring to the case. Enjoy your thoughtfulness in it. And it's an example of a disagreement where I'm richer for us having a disagreement there. I think
in the end, but in the end, you're both not eating bread the same days. Leavened bread, I guarantee that. Isn't that right?
Well, the only difference would be that that one of us would eat unyeasted bread one more day than the other. I mean,
See, I started at Pesach right there at the Pesach dinner because it's, you know, I put it right under the lamb, right into it, and from that point on, I guess it is 8 days. Actually, that I'm not.
That would be consistent with JB's.
Hey, all right, JB, you're the man.
Yeah, and that's but it's inconsistent.
Actually,
with...
I've got a slightly different take on it than that. I see
okay.
the way I've come to see it, and is that Passover, the lamb is slaughtered on the 14th day, but the meal is not eaten until the start of the 15th day. So the lamb that the Passover lamb is eaten on the at the beginning of the first day of Matzah. So I eat my unleavened bread with that lamb, and then for the next 7 days as well.
Okay, and so that's a different version than I would embrace because of the fact that Yosha celebrated Pesach dinner on what would have been the beginning of the 14th day. Which is the sun
yeah.
was setting on the 13th day is when he ate Pesach with his disciples, and then that same day, which would have been the following day from our time reckoning, but the same day from the Hebrew reckoning of time, he became the Passover lamb. It was the only way he could both eat Passover and serve as the Passover lamb was to have the Pesach dinner be as the sun sets.
So I'm agreeing with you, Yada. You're the man. Okay.
but here's where I really want to agree is that so long as our thought process is on trying to understand what Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim represent and our desire to meet with Yahweh and celebrate this time and to understand what the yeast represents, the bread represents, the lamb represents, the doorway to life, the being perfected by God, being adopted into his family, and we celebrate that. The fact that I may do it a day before, I may start a day earlier than you do, and we may end up concluding on the same day, but because I'm going to do it for 7 days, in the end, I don't think it matters. I mean, I think it's interesting to discuss. I think that the possibility for having sound, rational conclusions and perspectives that are different was by design.
Well, see, my take on it is I start right there at Pesach. I'm going to have right there at Pesach dinner that day. I'm going to have matzah. And you know, in there, I can't give you the exact passage. I'd have to have it in front of me. But Yahweh says, don't get yeasted bread anywhere near my blood. So he's saying on Passover, you're not eating any.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no yeasted bread for Passover.
Yeah,
right. Right. And that started that evening, and then you got the whole next day. So that's one day. Then you got 7 days
yeah.
of matzah. That's how I look
yeah.
at that.
Yeah, and I look at Pesach, matzah, and Bukurim as one event. It's yeah. just they're one event. They're
so you're
not
looking
in
at Pesach 7 days. That's it.
Right.
That
the most important day isn't Pesach, and it's certainly not Bukurim. Although the day that I like the most happens to be Bukurim, because it celebrates our adoption into Yahweh's family. But the most important day is clearly matzah because of its significance to us, because to be eternal and not perfected is a really bad option. And to be perfected, you automatically become eternal if you're perfected. So, I mean, the key day is matzah. So I look at those 3 days as being a universal celebration of matzah, of unyeasted bread, with the first day of matzah being Pesach. But again, if somebody had a different view on that, it's celebrated. Another great example is that there, and JB, you and I have gone over this a gazillion times, and I think on this one we came down to the same conclusion, that there is absolutely nothing in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that tells you that that the first day of the first month is when you can actually see the first sliver of light renewing on the moon's surface, and that that occurs after sunset. And there is no instructions on what constitutes the first day of the month, whether it is...
That could be observational or it could be astronomical. That's right.
Right.
It could be a
plan. And even in astronomical, is it, and from my perspective, I have chosen on astronomical to say that it's only if the renewing crescent on the moon's surface is initiated after sunset. If it's not initiated after sunset, then and the challenge here is that that on a new moon, the sunset and the new moon are right next to each other, and moonset and sunset are really close together. And so, it has to happen in such a way that it actually counts on that day, from my perspective.
Yeah, it has to be renewing.
Right,
yeah.
Renewing on that day, otherwise it's not the first day of the month. If it's renewing after the moon sets, I'm telling you, I don't count it. So,
it isn't that day. That's
but,
right.
But,
that would
but,
be right.
I'm extrapolating. I'm extrapolating from the evidence. I'm looking at what Kodesh means, which is renewal, and I'm thinking, okay, that means the light on the moon has to be renewing, and so what would constitute the first sliver of renewed light on the moon? And so I'm extrapolating from the evidence and from the words, but you have to extrapolate, which means it's possible that different people would come to different conclusions as to what the first day of the month is, and there are passages where it's clearly calculated, and there are passages where it's clearly observed. So I've come to the conclusion that we were not given enough information to be absolutely certain and definitive. What do you think, JB?
I agree. It's left that way, like you said, it's on purpose. We can discuss it. We can think about it. Well,
right.
We come to different conclusions. This is the perfect example. Yeah, I may agree, think one thing. You may think another thing. I can't prove you wrong. You can't prove me wrong.
Right.
Just,
your perspective has merit. Has merit.
Mm-hmm.
And it causes us to focus on and discuss really important issues relative to our relationship with Yahweh. That's a good thing.
Exactly. I think that's what Yahweh wants. I think that's, like I said, I think it's intentionally ambiguous. Talking about it in the chat room, I spent the entire week of months, I took off, it was a few years ago, I take off, and I decided I wanted to try and nail this down, and I spent the entire week, almost every waking moment, because Patty was working that week, she couldn't get off. So I was, in the scriptures, and it was like trying to nail Jell-O to a wall. They were saying, I'm like, okay, that I'm 100%. That is what it is. And then I'd read this, and I'd be like, wait, no, this is right.
Right. You shared all that with me, and I came to respect all of it, and then was was not persuaded to move from what I consider to be my understanding of what Yahweh had said. But what I did is I grew in sense of an appreciation for the fact that I am not going to be dogmatic here. And that's really important, is to not be dogmatic, not to claim that, you know, you are the, I am, or anyone particularly is the ultimate conveyor of absolute certain truth, is that I became more convinced than ever about the importance of this, but also more convinced that God doesn't want someone to be a yes man. Don't. You know, think about it. Reason together. Let's, tell me what you think this means. That's what I think he's looking for. That's what he enjoys. That's what we're going to be doing for all eternity. So I think it's wonderful that the answers are not cookie cutter, that you have to think your way through them, and you're always refining what you've come to know and understand.
Well, that's right. And by the way, I find it beautiful that religious initiates feel like they'll be worshiping Yahweh for eternity. Because to look forward to an eternity of being an ass kisser is what they deserve.
Yes,
I mean, that's what
that's the rule. Okay, I'll follow the rule. Thank you very much. All right. Yeah, just here's the rules. Follow the rules. And while you're doing it, bow down to me and tell me how wonderful I am. That's not the God that I've come to know. It's not a God that I've come to know.
No, it's not God's nature. It's not in his character. He doesn't need to have his ego assuaged from time to time. He doesn't need any of that.
I'm going to tell you that as a flawed mortal man, to come into the immediate proximity of the brilliant power and perfection of Yahweh, I'm going to find pretty
that's
humbling
awesome,
there
okay.
for a while. You know, it's going to be awesome, but you're going to be like so many of the others where you want to fall down and say, oh, you know, I'm not worthy of this, and then you're going to hear Dad say, come on, stand up. Stand up, let's give me a hug.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's not like I'm going to be walking up to some guy at a grocery store.
Right.
Saying, you know, where are the fresh strawberries or something? I mean, I understand that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very comforting for me, at least, to know that he has no interest in worship and that he wants to know me for real. And that's a big deal.
That's a big deal. And wants you to continue to be you, to continue to share, to challenge things that are challenging, occasionally to be
argumentative. Remember the show you went over on perfection?
Yeah.
Remember when you went over, you know, if your wife got out of bed, she looked like, you know, she was ready to go to a wedding or something, you know, how intimidating that would be?
Oh, of course.
Remember that?
Yeah.
That was really a home run show, because I thought about it. You at your best ever, all the time.
Right.
That's insane. I mean, it's insanely beautiful. It really is.
Right.
So, you know, that's big time.
Yeah.
Big
so,
time.
When we come to realize that Yahweh's testimony, while it is perfect, that our ability to fully understand everything that he has said and how it relates together is imperfect. It's a celebration, though, of moving from the flawed gray areas to the light is what is wonderful. And, you know, and with light, there's lots of colors, lots of wavelengths. Still light, and that's I think what we're celebrating here. A great example is one of the shows that I dreaded the most. I would say is the program I dreaded the most is the one we did on what you shouldn't eat and what you should eat.
Yeah, I was gonna, the bacon show. Yeah,
right. Uh-huh. Yeah, that That is the show that I dreaded the most, and ended up leaving that show feeling more kind of inspired, more comfortable, because I got so many emails after that show of folks saying, you know, I learned something. You know, and it didn't matter what side of the of the equation you happen to be on. You know, I've admitted that I could be wrong, and I'm fully willing to admit that this is my interpretation of this. But my interpretation is that the food laws don't exist as laws to be obeyed, but they exist
religious edicts.
No, and everything else in the Torah, they exist as instructions to be understood. And so that whole program of what we of going through, this is what was said, and let's try to figure out what this means and how to apply this, that resonated with a lot of people. And
that was probably my favorite show in recent memory because it was great. It was something I've talked about before with other people. I've thought about. I'd come to a certain conclusion, and then I hadn't really thought about it in a while. And then it came up, and we started talking about it. And we looked at it. You brought up things that and put it in a perspective I had never even considered before. And it was just wow. That makes so much sense. It was great because it was a perfect example of exactly what we were talking about. The whole idea of chewing cud and what that meant, chewing it, eating it, regurgitating it, and then chewing over it some more. And
what's the separation on the path? What's that?
Yeah, moving towards the separation.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. And
I'm all about separation. Oneness thing is a bunch of separation.
Now, one of the reasons I really enjoyed that is that. Well, it was Larry. You asked me to do a program on it. I didn't want to do a program on it. And the reason I didn't want to do a program on it is because I'm uncomfortable suggesting that we should do anything that is contrary to our Heavenly Father's advice. And yet, from my perspective, all of our Heavenly Father's advice is teaching for us to understand. Now, well, I think there's sound reasons to take that position. I realize there's lots of people who take a much harder line on that than I do, and so I don't want to be a divisive with the family in this regard. So I said I don't want to do it, but it was I didn't see any way out of it, and then I've Larry, I've got a lot of flaws, but one of them of my strengths that I share with you is I'm not a coward. I'm just not a coward.
No, you're not.
And I said, all right, I don't want to do this because it puts me in a position where I'm going to get a lot of criticism, and I could be viewed as divisive, and I just don't want the criticism. It's hard enough to do what we're doing without criticism coming from the family. It's one thing to get criticism from the idiots out there. I don't, criticism from the family smarts. And so I didn't want to do it. I said, my whole relationship with Yah has been always one of courage and never one of timidity. I've just never had a timid spirit. And having courage in my relationship with Yahweh, willing to stand up, has always served me well. I've never felt that Yahweh ever wanted to smack me down for having courage to engage. And so I said, I'm going to do this, but this is one of those days where I do not have the answer. So if we're going to do this, I'm dependent on you providing the answers. And then to read what he had to say and then to just have the light go off and say, here's something to think about in terms of the really digesting what I have to say and not just swallowing it, but then bringing it back up and doing what we're doing right now. Rethink it, reshape it.
Speaking of bringing things back up, you've often said, one of the things you want to do, what do you want to do? What do you want to do when, you know, you step into that next life? And I'm going to tell you one of the things I really look forward to.
Yes.
You know what it is?
What's
I'm going to walk into Suga, and I'm going to sit down at a table with all these people that are part of this group.
Yes.
And
we're going to drink really fine wine and have some really, really, really good meat. Because Jean has said that. And there's going to be a hell of a bonfire, which I love because I just love the smell and the sound and the warmth of it. And we're going to have lots of laughter. And it's going to be a genuine celebration. Now, I'm really looking forward to
it. It's going to be a victory celebration for us. Yeah. And I look forward to sitting down at a table with all you people. Really,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah. And I've told you, remember what I've said is the first thing that I want to do and the thing that I actually look forward to the most. There's two things, but the first thing is I want to stand in the back of the room. I want to stand in the back of the room. I just want to see the expression on, and I know Yahweh's spirit, but he still presents himself as having a face. I want to witness his expression as he greets some of those who have come to know him because of the work we have all done together to learn what he had to say and to share it. I want to be there just in the back of the room to enjoy that moment. That's the thing I've looked forward to the most. Second to that, well,
court days.
Pardon?
Judgments. Court
yeah,
days.
Well, yeah, that's the third. The second is I really love science. I mean, I love exploring. I mean, learning stuff is a big deal to me. And celebrating a life and learning is a big deal. I really do want to get together as a group that has a similar interest and go off and explore the existing universe while we can before Yahweh creates the new one. I'm happy to witness the
new
one.
Well, that may well come
first.
Yeah.
That may well come first.
And that is the second thing I want to do. And I want to tell you, I want all you guys there, but I also really, really want my son with us, and I want to go off and explore the universe and talk about it and take, you know, moments where we just all just stop and say, look at this. This is just marvelous.
Go up there and look at Lucy, huh?
Yeah, I want to go do that. I really do. I want to. So that's the second thing I want to do, and the third is the thing that you've just talked about. I want to sit around the bonfires and celebrate the parties with Yahweh, with all of us, and to sing songs and just to enjoy that party. But I am guilty of animosity. I have major animosity for Paul, for Muhammad, for Akiba, for Hadrian. I have major, major animosity for popes, and I want to be there. Yeah, Hitler. I want to be a witness at
Paul.
Their trial. Paul. Oh, absolutely.
Paul, Muhammad, those are the two I want to see the most.
And I've asked the boss, I said, listen, I understand that your Malak are much better equipped to present the evidence against them than I am. But if you wouldn't mind, I would also like to be a witness. I would love to play a small role in holding them accountable for the hell that they've unleashed. So I don't know.
I say you've earned that.
You know, I don't know if I've earned it, but nonetheless, I'd like to do it.
Just put in the work to be a very good and valid witness against both those people. So
yeah, and I really, really, really dislike them.
You know, Yada, you may well be. You may well be, and I mean this, the Shimon of our time. I believe that.
You know, I don't.
I know you don't like to take a lot of credit.
I don't want any.
Well, I mean that's kind of how I view it. Really, how I view it.
I only view it is that somewhere a long life's journey. Yahweh decided, and this is true for each of us, so this is not just me, this is for every single one of us. Somewhere along our life, Yahweh saw something in each of us that he liked. And he met us halfway.
I actually had this conversation with a fellow, Anthony, yesterday, who said, I think that Yahweh sort of picks who he likes. I said, well,
it's
people I don't want to know.
It's his prerogative. I think it's consistent with, you know, Abraham didn't know Yahweh. Moshe didn't know Yahweh. He met them while they were living their life. There was something about them that he liked, and he knew that those would be, because he lives outside of the constraints of time, that we would eventually get it and celebrate it when we got it. But that he met us along life's way, and the thrill, the honor, the excitement, the joy, all of the benefits are equal for all of us. All we did is when he met us along life's way, is we responded. That's really it. We responded. You know, when Dod said that, you know, Yahweh, you know that I have not withheld your testimony. None of us have. We've not withheld his testimony.
That's the truth. You know, I look at that chat room. I'm not looking at it at the moment, but I have a good idea who's in there. They're all upsiders.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is, being part of the covenant family is the greatest reward. Yosha was constantly telling us that whoever, tries to be the greatest will be the least, and whoever is the least will be the greatest. And while I can tell you, and I think I speak for everyone in the chat room, everyone that's listening to this program, that none of us has any desire to be greater than anybody else. In fact, I think all of us are just looking forward to being just kids in God's family, and we're all the same. The reality is that there is no hierarchy with Yahweh. There just is none. He's Dad, and we're his kids.
That's kind of an amazing thing, you know, when the way we're programmed to have leaders and everything, and none of
it's
real.
I think to a large degree,
that's in and of itself.
Those who come to embrace the covenant are opposed to authority. We don't like authority. We don't like command and control. We're all freedom advocates. In terms of the family, we are all the same. Every single one of us. We have the same.
And that could have been said of probably Yao Kanan and Madan Yao and Simon, and that's all true.
It's all
but
true.
But yet, you know, somebody had a kind of leadership role, whether they were considered a leader or not.
I just
have to say, the work that you do is immense, and it's appreciated by everybody out there in the chat room and others listening. So it is what it is, Yada.
It all goes back to just simply wanting to know what Yahweh had to say, and then being excited about it to the point that we're willing to invest the time and the energy to put the pieces together, to understand what is being conveyed, and then to share it.
Do you want to hear something pretty wild? There were two things I really wanted to know when I engaged with Yahweh.
Yes.
One was his name.
Yes.
And two was, how is it that Dod was so great?
Yeah.
And I believe I have found them both.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I have.
That's huge, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, those were
yeah.
specifically two things I asked.
Yeah. And so, I want to tell you, Dode is great. He is. Yeah, he permeates everything. He permeates everything. Dode is great. And yet Dode was a scallywag. I am so grateful for Dode.
Well,
and the reason I'm so grateful,
putting it very, very mildly, and that's wonderful, and I love it. I honestly love it.
Yeah, I just think it's so perfectly Yahwa to take a scallywag and to make him the most the exemplar of righteousness. Because what it tells us,
sort of the opposite of religion, isn't it?
That it's not about obeying in a religious sense a bunch of rules, but instead
about figuring
about our,
things out.
Our attitude, our focus, our desire, our understanding, our response. It's about observing.
I could ask everybody in there. I could ask everybody tonight. What if the Torah was taken from all the knowledge that you've gained and it was just taken from you? It would be the most horrific loss of your life. I guarantee
you. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, if you were to say you could take everything away from me but one thing. I mean, it would, I mean, my heart, I wouldn't even know how to go on living if you were to take my wife and sons. But I'll tell you that if you were to say, I can only leave you with one thing, it would be the Torah. That would be the last thing that I would let go of, and I would let go of it. Because with the Torah, we have knowledge of who Yahweh is. We have the opportunity to engage in a relationship with him. We have the opportunity to live with him forever in his home. We have
and
the
you know
opportunity
what?
To be part of this
as,
family.
As true as that is, and as
yeah.
real as
right.
real as that is,
yes.
we can't get our own relatives to engage.
I know.
It is simply insane.
Yeah, I know. And I'm going to share something with you that may or may not be true. Well, I'm certain that Yahweh would be more than happy to have everybody who wants to know him and who is willing to act upon the terms and conditions of the covenant live with him forever. I think it's really difficult for someone to engage with Yahweh that Yahweh doesn't meet along the way. I think that that the only opportunity for those of us who are part of the covenant to be part of the covenant without Yahweh meeting along life's way and inviting us in, walking with us along the way, is the son, husband, wife, a direct family member who comes to embrace, like JB, when JB came to embrace this and then shared it with Patty, there was a common ground. When Kirk and Terry, for example, came to this together, I think there are examples where an individual can share Yah's testimony with another, and that is enough. I know that was not the case for me. I had Yahweh not met me along the way and reached out his hand and let me follow along, I wouldn't be here.
Yet, interestingly enough, you have situations like Lot, and it's
mm-hmm.
him and his whole family, really.
Right.
Noah.
And his family.
Another.
Yeah. So I do think, that's what I was sharing. I think there's situations where you get the family, when one person comes to know the family benefits. There are those examples, and there are those examples of isolated individuals. You know, we do not hear about Matanyah's, for example, wife and sons. We don't hear about, there's a lot of folks we just don't hear about in terms of extended family. But
that's right.
The majority. I think the majority of us end up coming to Yahweh because he saw something in our personalities and our makeup that he liked. And still, just like Moshe and Abraham, gave us the opportunity to respond. We responded favorably, so that, you know, we're not in this because he grabbed us. He didn't yank us out of the world, but he certainly reached out to us and was willing to walk with us out of the world, so long as we were responsive. I think that's how a very substantial percentage of those who are in the covenant come to the covenant. And then beyond that, it's family ties. And that's part of when you were talking about a place of honor or value or worth. As I look at it, and what we do, I see that all we really can do, Larry, is to do what we are doing, which is to come to know Yahweh, share what we know. The rest of it's his responsibility. Our responsibility doesn't go any further than that. Learn and share. I don't want blame for not succeeding, and I don't want credit for succeeding, because you can't have one without the other. So I think it's our place to learn and share. And that, to me, that's 100% of the fun is learning and sharing without accountability.
I was gonna say, you can't really have one without the other. Every time I learn something, I just can't wait to share it.
Yeah.
And personally, I love learning, so.
Right.
You know, if I ran out of stuff to learn, I would be bored out of my mind.
Right. And that's kind of why someone says, you know, I want to thank you for doing this. And you say, why would you do that? I mean, the single most fun thing I've had in this life is learning. And the second most fun thing I've had is sharing what I've learned. So
that does put you in an uncomfortable spot. You know, I get a lot of people that thank me up and down and sideways for the translations that you do.
Oh, come on.
It's just bizarre. I even tell them I don't do the translations, and they'll come back a week later in my inbox saying, what do you use?
Yeah.
It's wild, you know, and I say, look, here, you know, here's a couple of ideas. This is, you know, this is what Craig uses, and I lay it out there to him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I would say JB, but I don't really get a hold of you on FB, JB, do I? I
mean, I'm not on Facebook, so.
Yeah, I don't do Facebook.
My wife's on there, but I tend to avoid social media.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, and we'll end up doing this next week, the statements that we're going to consider and the Mizmor 119, starting 116, 117, and 118, all require a review of Hebrew, even to make sense of them. So, you know, we're going to get right into a Hebrew, here's Hebrew Grammar 101, because unless you have an appreciation of stems, of moods, and of conjugations, the statements won't resonate. So, you know, that's will be part of our program a week from today. Will be an emphasis on. In fact, I'm probably going to literally read it from what I've written, as opposed to try to do it extemporaneously, because you really got to understand the moods and the stems to make sense of what's coming up next in the psalm. But, you know, that's to me, that's sort of like understanding the universe better, because you've taken the time to understand chemistry. You know, if you understand physics, then you're better, you're more capable of understanding the world we live in. You have to understand the stems and the moods and the conjunctions that comprise Hebrew if we're going to effectively convey its meaning. So that's what we're going to do.
And yet you lay that out, too, in translations. You know, I mean, it's not like it escapes me. What I'm good at doing is taking a part of this and a part of that and putting it in a very small note and laying it out there and crushing another religious
And that's the nature of family, is that if in a family we were all doing the same thing, and if our proclivities were always identical, then how are we contributing to the family?
Right. It would be tough if we were all just doing translations, or tough if we were all sharing notes.
Right.
If we were all just building websites. I get it.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Right.
Correct. Yeah, it's how a family works together. Yeah, and the discussion over the dinner table with a family ought to be different perspectives. And that's exactly what we're doing.
And it generally is.
And it genuinely is, yeah. It's a great stuff. Well, speaking over the dinner table, I'm going to go and have mine. Larry, I'll have you know that since you were a bodybuilder and someone who worked focused on what you ate and your exercise, that I got way out of whack. And about 3 weeks ago, I began to exercise hard with a personal gym and with a stair climber, between a minimum of 30 minutes and most days a full hour. I mean, really pushing it hard.
And it's a wake up call. It's a wake up call.
Yeah. And
one of the things that you should probably add to your diet, though, is just a couple tablespoons of raw coconut oil.
Yeah, you know, I've got that, too. It's in the refrigerator.
Okay.
I should start doing that. But I'm my wife took it for other health reasons. But I've restricted my calorie intake between 600 and about 900 a day. And, yeah, that's a lot.
That's
600 to 900 a day. And I'm exercising, I mean, really pushing it to the point, you know, I'm just perspiring full hour a day.
Well, then what you're going to find out, you know, what metabolism really is how much muscle you put on, you know, and for every pound of muscle you have, you burn 50 calories a day extra.
You're right.
So,
and what I'm doing right now is like the first 3 weeks, I was constantly losing weight, and for the last week, I've sort of hit a plateau where I can tell that my midsection is decreasing in size, and I'm considerably stronger. So I've kind of hit a plateau where even with the restricted diet and the exercise, it's mostly about redistribution now as opposed to simply
there's a redistribution you can deal with for a change. I'll just throw this in at you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got that 45-minute window, you know, after you work out to eat. And none of that can become adipose tissue. None of it can become fat. So what you want to do when you get done with your workout, eat within 15 minutes. The reason for that is because your insulin, you spike your insulin when you're working out. That's what you do. And once your insulin spikes, it starts burning fat. And guess what your body cannot do while it's burning fat?
Can't create fat.
It can't store fat.
Right.
So eat away, pal. Those are the free meals right there.
So and within 45 minutes of a heavy workout,
within 45 minutes. I try to do it within 15 minutes.
Okay.
You know, why not? And at that
now,
point,
within 20 or 30 minutes of eating the meal, you went to began a heavy exercise?
No. You don't want actually. You want to go, for what you're trying to do, you want to go in on an empty stomach.
Okay.
And eat 3 apples a day. That'll burn fat, though.
Yeah, the things that I'm eating a lot of is, I'm not eating 3 apples a day, but I am eating an apple a day. I spread it over the course of the day. I eat a lot of celery, bell pepper, and carrots. And,
all those things will burn fat.
And just to keep my metabolism up, at least every 2 to 3 hours, I'll have a half a dozen almonds or some kind of a nut, just to keep the metabolism up.
Almonds, walnuts, they're definitely good.
Yeah, and I love walnuts. I love almonds, and I love walnuts.
And those are both very good for you. I would just tell you, though, that eating three apples makes a big difference. I mean, a big difference.
Okay.
Also, if you care to, you know, just drop in a couple additional inches pretty quickly, if you'll take real apple cider vinegar, not the cheap stuff, you know, the stuff that's $5 a bottle, and put in 2 tablespoons in a 8-ounce glass of water, drink that once a day, usually around your lunch meal, you're going to find you're going to lose weight quicker that way, too.
Okay.
I'll have to try that.
Since you've done all these things and you have and they've been a real priority to you, if you just happen over the next week or so if you could invest 5 minutes to send me an email and
I'll
say,
do it.
Here's some of the things.
Email.
Yeah, would you mind doing that? It no hurry.
No problem.
But when it's convenient for you, I would love you to share some of the because you obviously know a lot more about this than I do, and my biggest issue is that typically when I begin to plateau, I begin to lose my enthusiasm because, you know, when you restrict your diet as much as I am, and there's so many wonderful restaurants to go to, I begin to lose my enthusiasm for it.
I'm hearing that.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that. I got this new restaurant, Rio Tucson, right? Five minutes.
Yeah, and you know what I'm doing now, the one time that I seem to be able to really push it from an exercise point of view is that I get up at 6, and between 6 and 6:15, I'm kind of just, you know, taking care of my dog and kind of getting down to the office and getting my computers, you know, LinkedIn, looking at the news and emails for the day. But from about 6:30 to 7:30, I've got the, for some reason, that is the time where I can jump on the stair climber, and then I can go onto my Universal Gym, and I can put in a solid hour of pushing those things as hard as my body can push them, and I can do it for
an
hour.
Universal, would it happen to be an Evolution?
No, my gym is actually a Bowflex.
It is. The old Bowflex or the... Yeah,
I don't know how old
the
Bowflex is. I mean, it's a Bowflex, and what I do on the Bowflex is I have 15 upper body exercises that I do between the various handles that I have on it, and what I do is those 15 upper body exercises, I do 3 sets of each of the 15. And I, you know, I'll start with as much as, and I set the same weight for all of them, so that it's an aerobic exercise, so I'm not going to changing the tension. So I'll do 3 sets of each of those 15, and I'll do as many as I can do the first time through. Let's say that's like 15 reps, and the next one might be 12 reps, and the next one might be 10 reps, but I'll do those 15 exercises. 10 to 15 reps of each, 3 times each, and then in between so that I can, you know, I have to have some kind of a break. I can't just do, you know, 15 and then do 15 and do 15 of the same exercise. What I'll end up doing is I've got a leg press, and I'll push that 10 to 15 times between each rep of the exercise, so that I'm constantly keeping my metabolism up while I'm on the Universal.
Well, heart rate up is what you're
heart rate up.
That's
yeah.
That's good. Yeah, that's absolutely a good anaerobic. You know, people say, you know, you do resistance training, you don't get any cardiovascular. You know, come on, 80% of your vascular system's in your legs, folks. Get
right
into that one, will you?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So that's why I'm using the legs to. During the break, as I'm trying to, you know, have 10 seconds where I can let the, you know, the blood flow back into the muscles and I can do the next rep. In between there, I'm doing leg lifts.
You're doing this. It's very aerobic what you're doing.
Right, I'm doing
aerobic. And, you know, you'll just burn fat no end. But what you've got to do when the plateau is changing up, and I'll just tell you how to do that. It's no big deal.
Okay.
You know, you just change it up. You know, and you can stay with the same exercise, but change it up. I used to, when we'd get people to the point that we wanted to diet them down, okay, say I wanted to get them dieted down, and it was a big show, what I would do is go in and literally work out with these horses 60 straight days. And by the way, in bodybuilding or in fitness training, resistance training, you know, there is a rule written in stone. This is kind of interesting. It's 6 weeks on, 1 week off.
Wow. The old rule of seven.
That's how it works.
Yeah. And I find
and,
that on myself that if
going,
I take one day off a week,
the negative
one day, I'll take one day where I will not do the heavy exercise.
Well, there's got to be one day, but there's got to be a six. After 6 weeks, everything's a six cycle. The seventh week, you're off.
Okay.
You know, your body.
So I can. So this idea of doing it 6 out of 7 days, and then doing it 6 out of 7 weeks, that there's
right.
no sense to all of that.
Oh, absolutely! It's in stone.
Yeah, I find my body really recovers so much better if I take one day off a week from pushing it.
Yeah, but then at the end of a 6 week cycle, you take a week off.
Okay, no, I got it. Yeah, so
yeah.
6 of 7 days and 6 of 7 weeks.
Yeah, and every good trainer will tell you that. Every one of them.
Okay. Yeah, I'm also told
isn't that something?
That
how does
diet,
that work?
That if you blow your sort of blow the diet one day a week, that that's not the worst thing in the world
that.
Either.
No, that's actually that's a good thing. Because it keeps your body out of whack. But what you probably want to do is at the start of the week, start low carbs, and then as you finish up the week, go high. And you also probably want to do kind of a high-fat, high-protein, low-carbohydrate type of diet.
Okay.
And I know people go, fat? Well, yeah, because, you know, your body starts burning fat.
Yeah, I can tell you when I started this and I was just not eating much of anything, the lack of proteins took its toll. I had 3 or 4 days where if I bent over, I fell over. If I leaned over, I'd
be dizzy.
You really
have to count proteins. You get 30 out of a piece of chicken. It's got a 75% amino acid balance ratio. You know what's got the highest balance ratio of any natural food? Is an egg white.
Oh, wow.
It's 98% digestible.
Yeah. So I did find that if when I went off of not getting enough protein, my body just wouldn't function. I lost. I was dizzy and queasy. I couldn't even get, you know, I do leg lifts and crunches and that sort of things, and I couldn't get on the floor because if I did that, I couldn't get back up because I was so dizzy.
How are you on bread?
What I'm doing right now is I've eliminated bread from my diet.
Okay, well that's the best. But I got to tell you, there's another one that won't hurt you, and I don't like either of these breads, but you might. You could eat rye or pumpernickel.
Okay, yeah, I don't like rye, except I will occasionally have a what do they call those sandwiches on rye with the sauerkraut?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but anyway. What I have done right now is I've eliminated bread. The only thing that I'm having that would be in the same carbohydrate is that I am eating some pastas, and so I have some pasta, but I'm not having any bread.
Yeah, well, I mean, you got to have some carbohydrates. You got to. You don't have
getting
20 a day. You won't even break the blood-brain barrier.
Yeah, I'm getting what little carbohydrates I'm getting right now is all from pastas. Like I'll have lasagna.
Just realize, you baby yourself after the workout. You know, that's when you go in and you make the crepe and you put the jelly on it, you know.
Okay.
I mean,
well, that's
really,
good to know. So what I can do if I'm exercising,
up,
for example, between 6:30 and 7:30, and the show doesn't start to 9, from 7:30 you know, right now I'm kind of 7:30. I'll go back and I'll work on preparation for the show. Because I can't go to the shower, because I'm working out so hard, if I go to the shower, I'll come out and I'll still perspire after the shower. So I'm kind of having to cool down for 30 minutes. What you're suggesting is
workouts.
Yeah, what you're saying is in that 30 minutes, eat.
Baby yourself. That's when you enjoy. None of it can store as fat. All that will happen is you will re-energize the muscle. That's all that's going to happen in your workout.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So if I wanted to have a breakfast burrito, for example, I could have it in that 30 minutes.
After the workout.
Right.
You know? And any sugars at that time won't hurt you. You know, I use these natural delis that still have the seeds in them. That's the best route to go. But what I used to enjoy, and I got to tell you, I've been injured, okay? So after a strenuous workout, I love a crepe. I make a couple of crepes.
Yeah.
And you know, put some of that jelly on them, and I just love life right then.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I'm eating that's going to hurt me.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, when you have a I've got a pretty good memory, so I've remembered most of this. But when you have a
I'll write it all down.
No hurry. Yeah, write down some of this for me. We've got a, you know, we've done a lot for each other. I would appreciate it, because it's I really got out of whack. You know, I'm I got at least 30 to 40 pounds over what my weight should be for my height and my age.
Well,
so
I pulled a hamstring muscle, so I did the same thing. And I'm just now getting to where I can work out again. I mean, it was bad news for me. So.
Yeah. And truly, if you're, like, I can do these upper body exercises, but there is, without the integrating the leg lifts into the upper body exercises, there's no way to keep the metabolism, the heart rate up, I should say.
The way you're moving, the heart rate is up.
Yeah.
You're okay. And what are you doing, like a squat or a leg lift?
Well, in terms of the exercise, it's sitting on a bench, and I'm doing a leg lift.
Where the
underside of the knee goes over a cushion, and the top of the ankle goes underneath another cushion, and you're lifting your leg straight. Pardon?
Yeah, one of the things you want to incorporate in there is free squats.
Yeah, my gym does not have the capability of doing a squat. So my only squat
Free squats.
Yeah.
You're just doing
them,
one of the things I used
standing
to do,
up.
We'd take a guy.
I used to do that a lot
took
to
a
prepare
guy.
For snow skiing. As squats were spectacular to prepare for snow skiing.
I took a guy. I was known to be, you know, the killer in the gym, and everybody was laughing. This kickboxer for the Air Force came in the gym, and he said, "Who can give me a good workout?" And they all sent him to me. I said, "Want to work legs today?" And he said, yeah. I put him on a leg machine. I had one of my monsters come up, and we had him do triple drops to negative failure, where we would bring up, you know, the weight, and then we'd take, when he couldn't do negatives anymore after we brought him up, then we'd drop half the weight, and he'd go all the way down, and then in between I made him do free squats. I put him through 5 cycles of this.
Wow.
And 2 years later, the guy came in and he said, "Where's that guy that beat me up?" So I didn't even work there. You know, this was something I did as an intense hobby.
Yeah.
He said he couldn't sit on a toilet for a week.
Yeah, and you know, so that you know, and I think you'd probably got this. The time where I'm trying to sculpt my physique is long past. You know, I'm within 6 months of being 60. So at this point,
you want to be healthy. I get it.
I just want to be healthy, and I got way too fluffy around the middle, and the face, you know, kind of you store fat in your cheeks and neck, and around the midsection, and my wife happens to be perfectly petite. She weighs exactly the same amount as she did the day I married her. She didn't have an ounce of fat on her.
And for me
to be to have blimped out is really just not fair. It's not not appropriate.
Well, you know, I'm kind of in the same situation with Yalda, but you know, I'm getting now to where I can do some resistance training. I can't run yet.
Yeah,
but I can do some resistance training, and that's going to be started.
Yeah. So that's all I'm trying to do.
Yeah, anyway,
is to get back healthier and to get a physique that's more in keeping with my height and age, not blown out around the middle.
I understand what you're talking about. If you looked at any of the movie stars lately, the guys we used to be the hunks, and you look at them and you go, man, they look like me. What's going on?
Yeah.
I'm getting older.
That's true. I don't mind getting old. It's better than the alternative. But I need to be...
Well, in our case, it may not be. You just, you know... Really.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
But thanks.
All right.
I enjoyed the show. JB, I enjoyed it. Thanks so much, you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.